The Tom Woods Show, episode 1072.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, with its incredible reviews and customer satisfaction, Casper is becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/woods and using promo code WOODS at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm very glad that David Stockman is back with us again. David Stockman, from 1981 to 1985, was the director of the Office of Management and Budget under President Reagan. Before that, he had served in Congress. He is the author of The Great Deformation, The Corruption of Capitalism in America. It is a fantastic book, a sweeping revisionist economic history of the 20th century, plus the best debunking of the bailouts you've ever heard. So I'll be linking to that book at tomwoods.com/1072. And of course, you should check out David at his indispensable website, davidstockmanscontracorner.com. David, welcome back.
Very happy to be with you, Tom.
Before we get started today, I'm curious to know if you're sticking to your prediction that Trump will not last through the end of 2018. Has anything changed?
I don't think so. They seem to think that this tax bill victory changed the game and put him back in the saddle. But I think there's less there than meets the eye. This bill was passed in desperation by the congressional Republicans because they want to have something they can campaign on to say, this is the Republican agenda. We did it. Trump didn't do it. If you don't like him, vote for us anyway. So I think it's only a matter of time before the deep state and the establishment and business as usual in Washington closes in on him. Of course, he's his own worst enemy. It's just getting worse and worse by the day. I don't object to him, using Twitter to communicate, but at some point, the sheer egomaniacal bluster exaggeration begins to, undermine any confidence that they have down in Washington. I was there during the early 1970s when Nixon was taken down, and things can change very rapidly. In January 1973, Nixon was riding high. He won a landslide victory that was almost unprecedented, 508 electoral votes, 42 million to 28 million on the popular vote, every single state, I think, except for Minnesota, if I remember right. And yet, 18 months later, they showed him the way to the helicopter, and he was gone and out of there as one event and one cut after the next finally eroded his standing. Now, Nixon went into that. I don't want to dwell on it too long, but I think it's well worth it. Nixon went into that 18-month period I'm talking about here, not only riding a electoral victory that is dwarfs the squeaker that Trump actually was elected on, but also on top of 25, 30 years of relentless politicking, where essentially he had campaigned from coast to coast in practically every congressional district in the country in behalf of Republicans. Well, Trump, he's an outsider. No one even knew if he was a Republican a couple years ago. He doesn't have that massive inventory of IOUs and history of obligations that politicians call in when the going gets rough. So, Trump's polls may have stabilized a bit, I think in the last few weeks since the tax bill I think that's highly misleading. If the market breaks, and you know, it's at a crazy, crazy, insane level at the moment, going up 100, 150 points a day for no reason whatsoever in the face of some pretty serious headwinds that we can get into. If the market breaks, and it will then spill in, it will spill into the economy, the perception of Trump in the country and on Capitol Hill will change quickly and quite dramatically. So this is a long way of saying that don't assume anything. This is a exceedingly unstable, unprecedented situation. Trump went to Washington with no friends, and I think he has even fewer now. So we'll see how it goes, but I think there's a risk of a pretty serious political upheaval that could take us by surprise in the right turn of events.
David, in this week's episode of our podcast, Contra Krugman, we look at a January 1st, 2018 column by Krugman, in which he is suddenly reminded that presidents, after all, don't really have that much influence over economic health. And he points out that right at the time of the election, when it looked like foreign markets were reacting badly to the election of Trump, and he was basically being asked, when will markets recover from this? And he responded, never. I mean, never? Come on. He says, all right, look, I admit I let my politics get in the way of my sober forecasting. But what he's saying is, look, it's the Fed chairman who really has the most influence over the economy, not the president. And so when Trump is taking all this credit for the strong economy, he probably doesn't deserve the credit. Now, that's actually a legitimate point. That's what we've been saying for a long time, is the Fed chairman really is the one who deserves the praise or the blame. But what I'm interested in at this particular moment is, given that everybody has been saying, well, you know, look, the first year of Trump has actually been pretty good for the economy, are you actually saying something different? Not that Trump doesn't deserve the credit, but rather that it's not actually as good as people think it is?
Yeah, I'm saying that. And I'm also saying I can't remember any occasion for years and years that I've agreed with Krugman. But in this case, when he said never, I think he was right in the sense there is no reason why the S&P ought to be up 30% from where it was on election day in November to, November 2016, because there is nothing good going to come out of all of this that's sustainable. The problem is that you have a Federal Reserve that's created this bubble and is running on kind of residual momentum. So the idea that Trump ought to be claiming credit for this is really a huge mistake and misnomer. This is simply the market speculators looking for the top and waiting for something a black swan, an orange swan, a red swan, something to appear and stop the sheer momentum of it. So Trump shouldn't be claiming credit at all. In fact, he was right in the campaign. This is a giant bubble. It was created by the Obama fiscal stimulus, the Fed's massive monetary expansion. It's not sustainable. It's not healthy. And it's going to collapse. That was his position in the campaign. He should have actually stuck with it. He should have asked for Yellen's resignation immediately, put a hard money man or woman in the Fed. That would have collapsed the bubble, and it would have allowed him to blame the breakdown and the consequent negative impact on the economy, on his predecessors, and on the regime that he was elected to change. But instead, he's embracing the whole thing. I mean, this is like putting your head on the chopping block and asking for the axe to be lowered. This is really one of the reasons, going back to our starting question, why I think his tenure is still very much in doubt, because the minute this whole thing begins to crack and unwind, and it surely will. I mean, do you realize that today the Russell 2000 is trading at about 130 times reported income, or even the S&P 500 today closed, upwards of 26 times. These are crazy multiples this late in the cycle. No one has really abolished the business cycle. We're in month 103 of this so-called expansion. We're nearing the all-time record of 119 months that happened in the 1990s under far more propitious conditions. And so, therefore, why in the world are you valuing the market at the tippy top of the historic range in terms of multiples when the game, is nearly over, when the jig is nearly up? So that's why, in some backwards way, I come to the same conclusion as Krugman, but not for the same reason. He's just trying to make a partisan point about Trump inherited this bubble, and it's expanded for another year on his watch. My point is, we have a rotten monetary policy. We have a dangerous institution that dominates all in the Federal Reserve, and it's heading for a real collision, because finally the Keynesians that are running that joint, and Trump has appointed some more. I mean, the new Fed chairman is about as much of a Keynesian as Yellen or Bernanke or Greenspan were. But even they have now kind of spooked themselves, because they do recognize we're in month 103 of this expansion. There will be a recession someday, and maybe not that far down the road, and they have no dry powder left. So what they are doing now, pivoting to QT, quantitative tightening, and normalization, is the biggest thing happening, and it's being totally ignored both by the stock market and by most of Washington, but especially the Donald in the Oval Office. They have said, we are going to shrink this balance sheet that became elephantine at $4.4 trillion by roughly $2 trillion over the next several years. And we're on a automatic pilot schedule that began at $10 billion a month of shrinkage in the quarter that just ended, going to $20 billion a month in the current quarter, and ramping up rapidly to what will amount to a $600 billion annual rate of balance sheet shrinkage by October of this year. Now, I want to juxtapose that with the massive fiscal explosion that is happening as a result of, the king of debt being in the Oval Office and the Republicans on Capitol Hill throwing any remnant of fiscal rectitude to the winds. They inherited for the year ahead, fiscal 2019, and that's the same time that the Fed is going to be dumping $600 billion a year worth of bonds into the market. They inherited a $700 billion deficit, built-in structural, a huge, monstrous problem. But they've already added $280 billion of more revenue loss in the tax cut, which is front-loaded and has its biggest revenue loss the first year. And on top of that, they want to add another $120 billion for defense and non-defense appropriations, $100 billion on top of that for all of these crazy disasters we've had. They promised money to various Republican senators to bail out the Obamacare subsidies in return for their vote on the tax bill. They have just gone nuts spending money like drunken sailors. So to bring it all to a head, I think we're heading for a $1.2 trillion deficit in fiscal 19. That's nine months from now it starts. $1.2 trillion deficit, 10 years into a recovery. Remember, you're supposed to have a big deficit in the recession, and in the first or second year, you're supposed to get back to normal and maybe even run a surplus if you're prudent 10 years out. But here we are facing a $1.2 trillion deficit, and the Fed, for the first time in 30 years, not buying bonds and thereby holding down yields, in a sense, in effectively monetizing the government's debt, but the Fed is going to actually be piling on and selling. That's essentially what balance sheet shrinkage means, selling down its balance sheet at the same time that the Treasury is selling $1.2 trillion of new paper. Now, that's $1.8 trillion if you add it up, and the question is, who's going to buy it? And who's going to buy it at anything like the 2.3% yield on the 10-year that prevailed until just a few days ago? Today, it soared. Some gurus like Bill Gross, the great bond king from PIMCO of past times, has said that, you know, we went over the tripwire, the bond bear market started. I'm not sure whether, you know, you can call it with that fine a point. But it now is heading towards 3%, and the whole financial system is basically geared to and predicated on ultra-low interest rates being sustained indefinitely. That's changing right now, and we're heading into a bond market collision this fall like we've never seen before. And I think that's just going to throw everything into a cocked hat. The Republicans are going to panic as they face the possibility of losing the House. The White House is going to panic as they face the possibility of a Democratic Congress, because you know what that would mean for the I word. You know, this is just one giant mess. And it's unfolding by the day. As you look at, what's happening in Washington, they can't even pass a continuing resolution that lasts more than a couple weeks at a time. I mean, that's how fractured and paralyzed and confused the situation is. So, we're kind of at, they use the word peak debt, peak oil. I think we're at peak financial absurdity at the moment, and this is going to come unstuck, unwound pretty quickly here. It will only take something not expected to start the run on this whole house of cards.
David, I'd like to ask you about Steve Bannon, and I'll do that after we thank our sponsor. Folks, I sometimes hear people bragging to me about how little they sleep because they think I'll be impressed with how much work they do and how productive they are. But actually, I just feel sorry for them because a good night's sleep is pretty essential to your overall health. And of course, you want that sleep to be as restful and comfortable as possible, which is where the Casper mattress comes in. Casper products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, so they provide supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles what we might call your natural geometry in all the right places. Their breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. Casper also offers a wide array of other products like pillows and sheets to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Affordable prices, free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada, and you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free Sleep On It trial. And guess what? You can get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/woods and using promo code WOODS at checkout. That's casper.com/woods, promo code WOODS at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Just yesterday, David, we learned that Steve Bannon was stepping down, obviously forced out over at Breitbart. And I want to ask you a couple things here. First of all, about Steve Bannon himself. Has he maybe overestimated his own influence? What's going to happen to him now? He had that feud with Trump. But more importantly, about Bannonism and your opinion of that, because I'm interested in somebody who is critical of Bannon from a non-leftist perspective.
Yeah, I'm happy that Bannon is gone, but I think Bannonism is still very much on the table in the White House, because Bannon simply was a self-described intellectual who tried to make sense in some ideological framework that he called, nationalism, of the dog's breakfast of Trumpian policies, which, when push comes to shove, boil down to protectionism, nativism, xenophobia, and, strong man bluster. There isn't any policy there that makes any sense whatsoever. The problems that we have in flyover America today, and an economy that's grinding to a crawl in terms of its growth, isn't due to imports per se, isn't because a lot of people are coming across the border with Texas and taking away American jobs. It isn't because there is a whole bunch of crime coming from immigrants, other than the drug trade, which is a function of our stupid war on drugs, not, anything that can be remedied other than getting rid of that. So I think the whole package that he put together of I would call it walls on the economy, walls on the border, was really upside down. The problem we have in America today is not what's flowing in by way of imports or immigrants, but what's flowing out by way of the imperialism that we're imposing all around the world and bankrupting ourselves on fiscally, and the monetary imperialism of the Fed. I mean, the Fed, when it took its balance sheet from $500 billion at the year 2000, the turn of the century, to $4.5 trillion, that's a ninefold increase in 17 years. Well, nobody wanted that many dollars, and so they flowed into the world economy. That's, the economic consequence in the form of our massive current account deficit. Had the rest of the world played by the old rules, their exchange rates would have soared, the dollar would have collapsed, but they weren't willing to do that because they're all mercantilists and Keynesians and statists of one type or another. So they intervened heavily in the foreign exchange markets, bought up dollars in order to prevent RMB and all the other currencies from rising. And that essentially meant that we were exporting to the rest of the world the monetary insanity that was being conducted from the Eccles building. So the problem is that we're living way beyond our means. These falsified cheap interest rates have allowed households and corporations to borrow like there's no tomorrow. That has, in the short run, added to GDP, because that's the way they calculate it, even though it doesn't really amount to sustainable growth in real wealth. These are the reasons why we're having the economic malaise that we have today in flyover America and all those precincts that voted out a desperation for Trump. The Fed is destroying the purchasing power of wages. The 2% inflation target is ridiculous. The Fed is destroying the value of savings as a result of interest rates that have been held close to the zero bond for 9 years. The Fed is encouraging the C-suites, the executive leadership of corporate America, to, you know, cycle their cash flow and their balance sheet capacity into financial engineering, buying back their stock, paying, you know, bloated dividends, engaging in massive, unproductive M&A deals. All of this really flushes the corporate resources back into Wall Street, levitates stock prices, fuels the speculative cycle and spirit that's underway, but it doesn't result in real, tangible, productive investments on Main Street that create productivity, rising profits and wealth, and real sustainable economic growth. So that, you know, that's the heart of the problem. And what did Bannonism or Trumpism have to say about the Fed? Well, Trump said, "I'm a low interest man." And as far as I can tell, and I followed Bannon pretty carefully, he never said anything about the core problem that was creating the economic decline that he proposed to solve with walls on the border, when the problem is the 12 people in the Eccles building and the need for a complete house cleaning, which obviously hasn't even remotely happened. I mean, in addition to Jerome Powell, who's not only a Keynesian from a philosophical point of view, but a crony capitalist from the Carlyle Group, for crying out loud, he's appointed a couple other people, or nominated a couple other people to the Fed who actually believe in negative interest rates. And now let's just get right down to the lick log here. Negative interest rates are confiscation of the wealth of people who are unwilling to buy junk bonds or overpriced stock because the Fed tells them to. And negative interest rates are a way of forcing people to do what the monetary central planners demand. But really, it's theft. It's like a fundamental wrong, evil, that shouldn't even be on the table of respectable thought. But we actually have a nominee, Professor Goodkind, by a Republican White House, who's not only advocated negative interest rates the next time there's a downturn in the economy, but that we ought to get rid of cash so that people have no alternative except to have their savings confiscated if they're unwilling to buy junk bonds. I mean, this is really crazy stuff, and I think it's indicative of why Trumpism has nothing to do with healing the economy, that Bannonism is a huge distraction and misdirection. And meanwhile, the two problems that we really have, an out of control national debt and a central bank that is dominated by monetary central planning, neither of those are being addressed in the slightest. In fact, if you can fathom it, they're actually being made worse. I can't think of anybody worse than to put someone on the Fed who actually wants to abolish cash and impose negative interest rates if, in its wisdom, the Fed decides to do that, or someone who 10 years effectively into this business cycle thinks it's a swell thing to pump up the deficit to $1.2 trillion in the face of what will be a recession one of these years, and even bigger deficits that will result from the breakdown of revenue. The big picture is before this asinine tax bill that they passed and all this spending for defense and disasters and Obamacare bailouts and all the rest of it, we already had built in roughly $12 trillion of new debt over the next 10 years in the baseline federal budget, which would take the national debt $32 trillion. And now they're adding on top of that trillions and trillions more. And, you know, this is a very dangerous and scary picture. And it's not something, and this is the important point that I'll conclude on, it's not something that's going to happen in the by and by, you know, that a danger for 2024 or 2027. This is happening in the here and now. You know, the furniture is going to start breaking in fiscal 2019, which is just ahead. And I don't see how they extract themselves from that kind of fiscal calamity.
And David, let's of course remember that in November 2016, Bannon was quoted as saying, "I'm the guy calling for a trillion-dollar infrastructure plan." So it's maybe right-wing Keynesianism, or it's there's no overarching philosophy here. It's a lot of ad hoc ideas. There's no, you can't trace a philosophy through it. And it's coupled with a dismissal of libertarianism and market economics. The presumption being that we should use the state to guide the economy in ways that benefit the base, the constituency, primarily the working class and maybe the white working class, that if trade deals are hurting them, if we perceive them to be hurting them, then we need to do this and that. It's a lot of ad hocery. We're going to have an infrastructure program. And the thinking is that if we have this or that kind of intervention, then the sum total of these policies will benefit the people who support us. But the thing of it is, you put all these policies together and they wind up hurting the people who support them. So it's just, it's what I've heard described as ad hocery in place of a philosophy.
Yeah, you know, I agree. That's why I called it a dog's breakfast, you know.
Yeah, that's a better term.
Yeah, there's no coherence, there's no logic, and there's no sound economic principle to it. The one, you know, taking the principle of fiscal responsibility or rectitude, you know, you can have a nice argument about how much deficit you should tolerate at the bottom of a serious recession like we had in 2008. But that isn't now. This is 2018. Supposedly, the unemployment rate is 4%. By the lights of all these Keynesians running the central bank or advising Wall Street, we're at damn near full employment. And in any common sense version of the world, you don't run a trillion-dollar deficit in that environment. It's just totally mistaken wrong. So the priority for a new administration should have been, how do we get our arms around this deficit monster? That goes to two areas, entitlements and defense. Well, look at defense. Trump has no clue what he's talking about, what he's doing. We're spending $600 billion for defense, as much as the next 10 countries combined. When he got there, he's now got it up to $700 billion. The thing is nonsense. It's another discussion for another day. But, you know, we don't really have any industrial-sized state enemies in the world that can threaten us. We don't need $600 billion. We can get away with $300 billion and we would still be plenty safe. This whole Russiagate thing and all of this hysteria about the Russian threat is ridiculous. I sometimes say I consider my apartment in New York City, which is on the 19th floor on the East River, I can see pretty far in all directions. And the point I make is I can see Russia from there, because the GDP of New York metropolitan area of $1.6 trillion is bigger than the entire GDP of Russia. So if you take a pipsqueak economy that's basically, you know, a giant hydrocarbon province, some huge wheat fields and decrepit factories, and compare that to the industrial might and base of the United States, and a military budget that is 10 times bigger than theirs, the question is, what's the hysteria all about, and why are we being panicked into this massive expansion of what I call the deep end of the swamp over on the Pentagon side of the Potomac River? Well, you know, this is where Trump is taking us, and you know, it it just makes no sense, and it's pretty scary when you really think about it.
It really is the worst aspect of Trumpism, in my opinion, because it just feeds into the standard narrative of American foreign policy. He's somewhat different on foreign policy, but not nearly as different as he should be. And often he's different in unhelpful ways. But certainly to call for a massive increase in military spending, that's just out to lunch. I want to recommend to everybody, by the way, David Stockman's ContraCorner.com. You are going to get there just unbelievable insight constantly coming from David Stockman. You'll be able to read this stuff and then just demolish anybody who comes up against you. He's absolutely top-notch. There's never been anybody, I think, from a former presidential administration who's come out and been as hardcore and incredible as David Stockman. And you're missing out if you're not checking out David Stockman's ContraCorner.com. You'll definitely want to read his article on Steve Bannon over there, but then also subscribe to get all his content at davidstockmansContraCorner.com/subscribe. Now, that's a lot of letters to type in, but there's no way David Stockman is going to let you down after you type all those letters in. You got to know as you're typing them, something amazing is awaiting me. So check it out at davidstockmansContraCorner.com/subscribe. How do you like that, David?
That's right. Okay, I appreciate that very much, Tom. I guess the real story is that after 4 years in the Reagan White House, I got run out of town on a rail. So it wasn't a matter of sort of hanging around the basket and making rationalizations and justifications or becoming a lifer in the Beltway. That's the problem. You know, prosperity doesn't come out of the Beltway. The Beltway is the enemy of prosperity. I guess I was able to maintain some clarity of thought because I left, Washington in 1985 and have had no reason to go back and become confused and conflicted as a lot of people do.
Well, I was doing a little Twitter push to get you nominated to be Secretary of the Treasury, and I think I had the hashtag Stockman for Treasury, something like that, but it was not successful. The Tom Woods bump was not substantial enough to get you over the top.
Didn't quite do it.
And the funny thing is, I think if you'd been approached, you would have turned it down.
Well, given what Trump's fiscal policy was, it would have been impossible. I would have said, yes, let's have a tax cut, but let's cut payroll taxes. There's 160 million people paying it on first dollar. If you're struggling at the minimum wage, or you know, you've been thrown out of your factory job and you have to make ends meet on two or three part-time jobs, you're really getting hit by $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a year of payroll tax. That's what should be cut. But secondly, it needs to be refunded with something else. Ideally, spending cuts. But if not that, then a consumption tax. But the worst thing we could be doing is taxing labor in the highest cost labor market in the world at 15.7%, which is the combined employer-employee OESDHI tax. That's what we should have done. But I'll tell you what, they didn't want to hear about that. They just wanted to whack the income tax and the corporate rate again and expect good things to happen when, you know, it's not a tax cut at all. It's just a deferred tax increase that, taxpayers born and unborn are going to be paying in spades down the road.
Well, again, David, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I cannot recommend David Stockman's ContraCorner.com highly enough. You are just going to love it. David's analysis helps you interpret the news and understand what's really going on beneath the surface, almost like no other resource out there. So I'll link to it, of course, at tomwoods.com/1072. And thank you, David.
Okay, great to be with you, Tom.
All right, everybody, here's an interesting website created by a listener. And it's called workingcows.net, workingcows.net. And I got the following email. I think my wife's blog, workingcows.net/blog, would be very interesting to your audience as it is an uninitiated look at a working family ranch. The podcast that you'll find at the site focuses on giving producers a platform to share paradigm-challenging practices. Generally, we're talking about regenerative ranching and sustainable methods that producers of beef cattle are using to increase profitability and improve their soil and water resources. If you've ever been interested in this kind of lifestyle, then this is the website and podcast for you. So check it out at workingcows.net. I'll be linking to it at tomwoods.com/1072 as well. And remember, you can get nice publicity like this and a free initial burst of traffic plus many other nice bonuses from me. All you got to do is use my link when you get your hosting, which you get at the best price available through me anyway, so the bonuses are just multiplied. So check out how you can do all this at tomwoods.com/publicity, and I'll see you tomorrow with our friend Brian McClanahan.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.